Our last case this morning is 2020-742 Cleveland Metropolitan Bar versus Michael Heller. For the respondent, pro se, Mr. Heller.
Good morning, Your Honor.
Counsel, you may proceed.
I'm sorry, can you hear me, Your Honor?
Yes, yes.
Okay, yes. Okay, thank you. If it pleases the court, Mike Heller, respondent pro se. Back in 2017, the complainant, Ms. Melissa Van Eyck, retained me to do her bankruptcy case. And to say the least, I screwed it up. I didn't do a very good job. I didn't give her proper time and attention. I didn't supervise my staff. And I'm very sorry for that. And I'm sorry to her that she went through that. But having said that, in 2016, I brought my then roommate and friend to into my office to help out Turner Friedman. And to say the least, it turned out that Mr. Friedman was less than competent, to say the least. And that's borne out by the briefs and the findings and so forth, and the court and the hearing transcripts. And he began stealing from me and eventually stole a fair amount of cash. Now, am I responsible? Absolutely, I'm the responsible attorney. Did I supervise him well? Absolutely not. In fact, I did very poorly so, and that's borne out in the briefings and in the hearing transcripts and in the board's findings. I don't deny that. I can't dispute it. Did I take sufficient remedial steps when I should have? No. So did I manage my practice well? No. Did I keep good books and records? Absolutely not. And all of that is borne out in the transcripts and in the hearing transcripts and the findings and in the briefs and so forth. So having said that, when Ms. Van Eyck came to retain me in spring of 2017, she paid something close to $935 in cash to Mr. Turner Friedman, who took $635 of it, gave her bogus receipts, which I never received, and pocketed the money. Again, my responsibility, poor supervision, failure to take remedial steps earlier along, no question about it. And I don't deny that. But I never saw that money. All I got was $300 of it. So we filed her, Chapter 7 petition with the bankruptcy court. And we stated that she paid only $300 in filing fees and that she could not afford to pay her, $300 in attorney's fees and could not afford to pay her filing fees at the time of filing. And was that incorrect? Absolutely. Did I know that or should I have known it? Yes, I should have known. I should have, as the board has, as the relator has argued, I should have taken steps to discuss that with the client. So I made a lot of missteps. Did I do that intentionally? No. Okay, so I would like to move to the findings of fact, conclusions of law, and recommendations of the Board of Professional Conduct, which was issued on or about June 12th, 2020. Okay, the board cited the case of Toledo Bar Association v. Miller. Now I'm looking at on the findings that I referred to, page 12, paragraph 51. The board cites Toledo Bar Association v. Miller, 132 Ohio State 3rd, 63, 2012, Ohio 1880. And they go on to state, and I'm reading a quote from the findings, an actual suspension of a lawyer's license to practice is the appropriate sanction when the lawyer has intentionally misrepresented a crucial fact to the court in order to benefit a party. So I believe that my case is distinguished from that case on two points. One, it says that the lawyer has intentionally misrepresented a fact. I've argued or I've conceded that I didn't know, no, but I should have known, and I understand that, and I concede that. So yes, I knew, but I didn't do it intentionally. So I think my case again is distinguished on that point. And then at the end of the sentence, it says, in order to benefit a party. Well, I didn't benefit because I didn't get the money. The money was stolen from me. I mean, one can make the argument that my firm benefited, but I did not benefit by that series of events. Was it my fault for not managing my practice? Yes, of course. No doubt. I don't deny that. I admit that. But did I benefit? No. So I think this case is distinguished from Toledo v. Miller. I'd like to turn to the aggravating and mitigating factors found on page 11 of the findings by the board, and specifically paragraph 47, the panel finds the following aggravating factors: dishonest or selfish motive. I have to respectfully disagree with that finding as of an aggravating factor, because as I've discussed, and again, and I've said it several times already, I failed to supervise my practice and my staff, and I've acted irresponsibly, but I was not dishonest or selfish. I didn't act dishonestly. Yeah, my staff did. Am I responsible for my staff? Yes. But did I personally, as an attorney, act dishonestly? No. Did I personally act selfishly? No. There was no selfish motive when somebody working for me stole money, both from my client and myself. So I have to disagree with that particular characterization as an aggravating factor. Secondly, pattern of misconduct. Well, it specifically says that I admitted that I did not consistently use my IOLTA account, which is true and which I admit. Then it says that the relator did not present any evidence, any other specific evidence beyond this particular case. But then it finds that that's a pattern of conduct. I think the term inconsistently is not necessarily a pattern. Being inconsistent means occasionally, here and there. I don't think that rises to the level of a pattern of misconduct. So I have to take offense or objection, I should say, to the aggravating factor of pattern of misconduct. Next, I would like to turn to the board's recommended sanctions on page 17 of the findings and recommendations, and recommends that Heller be suspended for 1 year with 6 months stayed on the conditions that, and goes on. Well, I the way I read this, the 1 year suspension with a 6 month stay is based on Toledo Bar Association versus Miller, which I've argued is distinct from my case. So I know that I'm subject to sanctions. I don't deny that, and I did wrong things, which I'd like to correct. But I would respectfully argue that it's reasonable to have a suspension that's fully stayed. And then I want to speak on recommended sanction number two, obtaining a drug and alcohol assessment. Okay, I respectfully disagree with that finding on four different points. First off, the original complaint by Ms. Van Eyck made no mention of drugs or alcohol. It was simply the mismanagement of my case. Number two, the only alcohol-related charge in the case found in count three was dismissed. So there was no alcohol-related offenses. Number three, there was no causal nexus between my offenses and alcohol. There was no evidence or nothing that indicated that the alcohol was related to the offenses. And lastly, and as is in the transcripts and in the findings, I've been a member of AA since August of 2017, almost 3.5 years. To this day, I go to meetings regularly. There's a club walking distance from my house, and I go there at least once or twice a week. I belong to a home group, and it's a group of men and women that have grown to know each other very well, or at least I've grown to know them and them to know me over a period of the 3.5 years. We're very close. We go to meetings and support each other, and we talk, and we even get involved in social outings on occasion or other events. And I've represented AA members, both in my own group and outside, that have been referred to me who are AA members. So, and I always offer affordable rates and occasionally act pro bono. So here I'm involved in this program for three and a half years that I've been successful with, and that I enjoy, and that I have people, and the board is recommending that I be subject to an assessment by OLAP. I don't think that's appropriate to take me out of a comfortable environment that I'm well ensconed and have been doing well and successful and happy with. Counselor, and especially under-
Counselor, can I interrupt you? Why would an assessment from OLAP interfere with that? Or why is it that you don't think that's appropriate, or that it conflicts with what you're already doing?
Well, no disrespect to OLAP. OLAP certainly is a fine organization, and they have a very specialized service. But I don't think that's
You don't feel it's necessary, or you feel that it hinders something you've already done? I mean, what's the basis of your objection?
Well, I think it could preclude my time and availability to spend my time with my own home group and my own club, which is walking distance from my house, which I'm comfortable with. It'll take me time, and I don't know what the assessment will bring and what they'll want me to do, but there's no reason to go out of my way and take time away from my present organization. And again, I've been comfortable and successful.
Counsel, based on the assessment, if they do an assessment, and one of the things that is done in an assessment is an examination of what your support groups are and what, you know, you're doing to mitigate or be compliant or whatever the necessity is. So it doesn't mean that your group would be substituted by another, organization, by OLAP. That's not necessarily the case.
Okay. Well, I can understand that, but nevertheless, there's no alcohol-related offenses and no alcohol-related nexus to any of the offenses that I have been found to have violated. So I just don't feel it's appropriate to provide an alcohol-related sanction where there's no alcohol-related issues in the case. Or no, I shouldn't say no issues, but no offenses. And
isn't there somewhere where you stated where you mentioned a problem with alcohol, or that there have been issues with alcohol?
Yes. Absolutely. No question about it. But that doesn't change the fact that there's no alcohol-related offenses, or that I'm a successful AA.
You're saying those issues are separate and apart from anything that has happened to bring about these disciplinary charges.
Absolutely. Okay. Yeah, like I said, Ms. Van Eyck's original complaint had absolutely nothing to do with that. That was brought up when the Bar Association did a background check and found that I had a DUI, and then they added that as a charge.
I see.
Counsel, wasn't your behavior with your clients and your inattention to, you know, I mean, the whole mess that you created coincide with the manifestation of your alcoholism?
I don't believe so. I was able to take care. I've had numerous clients.
Counsel, 2017, isn't this when your mismanagement was occurring?
Yes.
And you apparently confronted your alcoholism, and you know, now you tell us you've done something about it, and that was in 2017.
Yes.
So you can see the correlation, maybe?
I'm sorry?
Can you see the correlation?
Well, I guess you can make that argument, but I, quite frankly, I don't want to kick my own self in the foot, but I don't think I managed my practice well for many years. I don't think it was necessarily alcohol related. I think it was just the timing was coincident. I took care of all my other clients. I've had no other discipline, no other complaints. And in fact, I submitted some 20 or 30 letters, I don't know exactly, from clients who gave me letters of recommendation that how happy they were with my representation. And that should be in the record somewhere.
All right, thank you. You've used your client, or I mean, you've used your time.
I feel sorry for what I did for my client, Your Honor, but thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. Ms. Mancuso?
May it please the court? I'm Attorney Sarah Mancuso, appearing on behalf of the relator, the Cleveland Metropolitan Bar Association. Of the 12 separate rule violations that were asserted by the CMBA against Mr. Heller, the board correctly held by clear and convincing evidence that Mr. Heller violated 11 of those rules. Of those 11 rule violations, Mr. Heller conceded that he violated 8. Mr. Heller now contests 3 of those rule violations. The Board of Professional Conduct, however, correctly found that Mr. Heller violated Professional Conduct Rule 3.3A1 relating to candor towards a tribunal, Rule 1.15A for failing to deposit his client, Ms. Van Eyck's cash filing fee and her attorney's fees into his IOLTA account, and Rule 1.5D3 for Mr. Heller's law firm's policy concerning the refund of unearned client fees. The board's recommendation that Mr. Heller's license to practice law be suspended for 1 year with 6 months stayed conditionally is appropriate based on the stipulations, evidence, aggravating factors, and mitigating factors in this case. Any lesser sanction should not be afforded to Mr. Heller based on the seriousness of his conduct. The condition that Mr. Heller obtain an OLAP assessment and that he comply with any recommendations made to him by OLAP is also appropriate. The board correctly concluded that Mr. Heller violated Professional Conduct Rule 3.3A1 because Mr. Heller made false statements to the bankruptcy court in his petition and as well as an application to the bankruptcy court to allow Ms. Van Eyck to pay filing fees and installments. Because Ms. Van Eyck had already paid all of her legal fees and court filing fees to the Heller Law Firm prior to the bankruptcy petition and application being filed. Despite the stipulations and clear and convincing evidence in support of this violation, Mr. Heller now claims that he did not knowingly make false statements to the bankruptcy court because his former assistant, Mr. Turner Friedman, collected those cash payments from Ms. Van Eyck and misappropriated those funds allegedly without Mr. Heller's knowledge. Mr. Heller, however, stipulated that by the date that Ms. Van Eyck's Chapter 7 bankruptcy petition was filed, that Ms. Van Eyck paid Heller Law Firm a total of $950 in cash payments. That constituted Mr. Heller's $599 flat attorney fee, flat fee, and filing fees in the amount of $335. Mr. Heller prepared and filed Ms. Van Eyck's voluntary petition despite receiving payment in full for the attorney's fees and filing fees. Mr. Heller filed the petition on behalf of Ms. Van Eyck, which incorrectly stated that his firm did not receive these payments. Mr. Heller also filed the application to allow Ms. Van Eyck to pay the filing fees in installments and attested that Ms. Van Eyck would be unable to pay the filing fees in full, although she had already done so. Mr. Heller failed to pay the filing fees that were received by his firm to the bankruptcy court, and as a result, in June of 2017, Ms. Van Eyck's bankruptcy petition was dismissed for the failure to pay filing fees. Ms. Van Eyck also testified at the hearing that she did not review the petition, the application concerning the filing fees, or any schedules that were filed with her bankruptcy petition prior to them being filed by Mr. Heller. Even ignoring the stipulations and evidence and assuming that Mr. Heller's facts that he's alleging are true, Mr. Heller still knowingly violated professional conduct rule 3.3A1 by his willful blindness. Willful blindness is established when it is shown that knowledge exists where a person believes that it is probable that something is a fact, but deliberately shuts their eyes or avoids making a reasonable inquiry with a conscious purpose to avoid learning the truth. By late December of 2016, Mr. Heller admitted that he knew that Mr. Friedman, his assistant, was collecting fees from his clients in cash and not disclosing that he was collecting these fees or paying the funds over to Mr. Heller or his firm. Mr. Heller never confronted Mr. Friedman in 2016, although he knew this practice was occurring. And Mr. Heller therefore made representations to the bankruptcy court without confirming with either Mr. Friedman or Ms. Van Eyck before filing those documents with the court, whether or not Ms. Van Eyck actually paid any sort of filing fee to his firm for her representation. And he did that knowing that Mr. Friedman was stealing cash payments from his clients. And even if the false statements were made in good faith, such misstatements are still reckless, which still constitutes a violation of professional conduct rule 3.3A1 based on the holding in Akron Bar Association versus Groner. Mr. Heller also argues that the written misrepresentations in the petition and application to pay filing fees did not materially alter the case or the parties, but this is also incorrect. The bankruptcy court dismissed Ms. Van Eyck's petition based on the inability of the filing fees being paid in her case. And even after this, Mr. Heller told Ms. Van Eyck that she would have to pay an additional filing fee to his firm for her bankruptcy matter to be refiled. Mr. Heller's misstatements benefited him because he was, and his firm, because he was able to continue to employ Mr. Friedman, whom he admitted that he was paying in cash without a W-2 or 1099 tax form. It is therefore proper that for the board to conclude that Mr. Heller knowingly made a misrepresentation of a crucial fact to the bankruptcy court, which resulted in a benefit to Mr. Heller and a detriment to Ms. Van Eyck. The board also correctly concluded that Mr. Heller violated professional conduct rule 1.15A as a result of the IOLTA violations that were found in this case. Mr. Heller now claims that he did not hold the client funds separate from his own property because he had no knowledge that Ms. Van Eyck paid any fees to his firm as a result of Mr. Friedman collecting those fees and misappropriating those funds. However, this contradicts the joint stipulations, including the direct stipulation by Mr. Heller that he violated professional conduct rule 1.15A and the uncontested evidence at the hearing. Mr. Heller already stipulated.
Counsel, before you go any further, there seems to be obviously two areas of contention here by Mr. Heller. One, he thinks the sanction should be fully stayed, I would imagine. And secondly, the assessment by OLAP. And in paragraph 60 of the recommendations, it clearly states that there's no proven correlation between his alcoholism and the issue, the facts of or why he's involved with the disciplinary system at this point. Yet, because he has had an admission of alcoholism and attends AA, I presume that's the basis for having an OLAP assessment.
Your Honor, the basis for the OLAP assessment is due to the fact that Mr. Heller, the CMBA did allege against Mr. Heller that he did get arrested in 2017 while all of this was occurring for driving under the influence, and he was involved in an accident and he fled the scene.
But that's not a, is that a charge against him related to this disciplinary process?
No, it is not.
Okay, so are you saying that he admits to being an alcoholic, but to be on the safe side, you'd want an assessment to see whether he's addressing that problem? Is that what, how we read that?
Actually, I take that back. That is a charge, and that's with a different rule violation. That's in concerning professional conduct rule 8.4B and 8.4H. But the board concluded that Mr. Heller's actions did not rise to the level of a violation of those rules. So that was a charge, but the board found that.
Right, but this isn't right, but that's not what he's been found to have violated.
Correct.
Okay, so getting back to my question then. The basis for the alcohol, the OLAP assessment.
The basis would be that Mr. Heller was unequivocal about whether or not he was still drinking at the hearing, and that he admitted he attended only one OLAP meeting, but never went back. But the basis just would be that this was involved during the same time period.
Okay, thank you.
Sure. With respect to professional rule violation 1.15A, Mr. Heller now claims he didn't separate Ms. Van Eyck's funds because Mr. Friedman collected those funds and he wasn't aware. But this does contradict the stipulations in the case. Ms. Van Eyck's, he had stipulated that he did not segregate Ms. Van Eyck's funds and put them into an IOLTA account. And he also stipulated that he did not audit records of receipts for his clients and fail to account for client funds. Mr. Heller also admitted at the hearing that he deposited court filing fees for his clients into his business account and not into his firm's IOLTA account, and that he had not changed this practice even after Ms. Van Eyck's grievance was filed. Mr. Heller also admitted he had no independent records for Ms. Van Eyck or other clients on whose behalf funds were being collected by his firm. Mr. Heller testified that he collected fees in cash with little or no accounting, and that he had paid his assistants in cash with little or no accounting. Mr. Heller also admitted that the adjusted gross income reported on his 2017 and 2018 firm tax returns could be inaccurate due to the underreporting of cash income. And Mr. Heller admitted at the hearing that the use of his firm's IOLTA is sporadic and not fully integrated into his practice. It is a lawyer's duty to establish a system of office procedure that ensures the delegated legal duties are completed properly. Mr. Heller failed to make reasonable efforts to ensure that his non-lawyer conduct in his office was compatible with the professional obligations of a lawyer. And this lack of awareness and misconduct by another person, whether or not they are a lawyer, under his supervision, does not excuse a violation of this kind. As such, the board properly found that Mr. Heller violated professional rule 1.15A. The board also properly found that Mr. Heller violated professional conduct rule 1.5D3, which concerns his firm's policy regarding the return of unearned fees. Mr. Heller now asserts that he did not violate this rule because there is in small print language regarding a refund in his representation agreement that Ms. Van Eyck signed. And again, the stipulations and the evidence contradict Mr. Heller's new argument. Mr. Heller already stipulated that the legal fee paid by Ms. Van Eyck was a flat fee payable in advance, and that his representation agreement provides that a refund of fees would be solely based on his discretion. This is indicated multiple times throughout the representation agreement. Mr. Heller also stipulated that he failed to refund fees to Ms. Van Eyck until the investigation was initiated by the Cleveland Metro Bar Association. So therefore, it's proper to find he violated this rule. With respect to the aggravating and mitigating factors, the board properly found that Mr. Heller did display a dishonest or selfish motive, Mr. Heller states that he did not because this conduct was all being committed through Turner Friedman. However, Mr. Heller's practice of dealing in cash with his clients, paying his assistants in cash without reporting that information on W-2s or 1099 forms, and underreporting his firm's cash income and tax income taxes is evidence of a willful pattern of deceit. And Mr. Heller likely earned substantial profits through these illicit arrangements. Multiple offenses were also properly shown because Mr. Heller stipulated that he violated 8 professional conduct rules, and the board found that he did indeed violate 11. There is also a pattern of misconduct that was shown here because a pattern can be shown in a single matter. Mr. Heller was aware that Mr. Friedman was stealing cash from his clients in December of 2016. He did not report that to the police until November of 2017, almost a year later. And the police concluded that due to Heller's very sparse accounting records, that they couldn't prosecute Mr. Friedman as a result. And Mr. Heller's willful blindness facilitated this pattern of misconduct. The fourth aggravating factor, the vulnerability and resulting harm to the victim. Mr. Heller alleges Ms. Van Eyck was given a refund and that this made her whole, but this is incorrect because Mr. Heller's actions left Ms. Van Eyck worse off than she was before she filed her bankruptcy petition. She now has a dismissed bankruptcy case on her record that is staying there, it is permanent, and her credit has not been repaired as it could have been had she gone through the process properly. For these reasons, at least a 1-year suspension with 6-month stay conditionally is an appropriate sanction against Mr. Heller in this matter. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any questions for Ms. Mancuso? Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, Mr. Heller, you've used all your time. Do you have anything else you'd like to tell us? You'll have to unmute yourself, sir.
Sorry, Ms. Mancuso had argued that my motivations were selfish and dishonest based on using cash procedures and paying my staff in cash. That's all partial to count 3, which was dismissed. So I have to respectfully disagree with her on that point. Other than that,
Mr. Heller, let me ask you a question.
Yes.
In 2020, how many times a week did you go to AA meetings?
Probably average of about once a week, maybe twice.
What about 2019?
Probably once or twice. Well, Your Honor, let me back up. In 2020, we had COVID virus, and
That's why I was going back to 19.
The club was shut down. It's opened up about a month or two ago or longer, and there's meetings now, and I am going now.
What about 2018?
Meeting this morning, quite
honestly.
2018, I was going. Probably at least three or four meetings a week.
And currently, how many people do you sponsor?
I don't sponsor anyone.
Okay.
No, I don't sponsor anyone.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, thank you. We'll take the matter under advisement. You'll be notified of our decision. Marshall, will you adjourn court, please?
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. This open session of the Honorable Supreme Court of Ohio now stands adjourned.